Welcome to your favorite F-word podcast, where we dive deep into conversations around food, fitness, feelings, with the occasional fuck thrown in. We're your hosts, Sarah
and Nicola,
owners of Paradigm Nutrition and Performance, nutrition coaches, besties, and most importantly, humans.
This show is for coaches, self-growth-oriented folks, active humans, or anyone looking to deepen their understanding and relationship with food, movement, and themselves.
Thanks for tuning in, and we cannot wait to share this space with you.
Okay, hi, hello, everybody. Another overdue, but classic us episode of your favorite F word being recorded on this not beautiful day at all. It's so rainy and gross here.
Oh, is it
fall? So welcome to winter. Sarah's in her new house. I am in the worst feng shui setup of my life on the couch. And
try to get that good Wi-Fi.
Yeah, goddamn. We're doing a fun, maybe question mark, fun little chatty episode. We put out to people on Instagram for offering advice because we're so smart and have our lives together and are so insightful. So some of you asked real questions and we will do our best, and others asked some funny questions.
Yeah.
So we're just gonna give a few, the first thing that comes to our minds, I think. Yeah. Our advice.
Some
for free.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, no kidding. Unfiltered. It's not totally unsolicited because, I mean, you guys did.
We did. We literally solicited it.
Yeah, and Nicola wants to call this the blind leading the blind.
No, helpers helping the helpless.
Oh, yeah, helpers helping the helpless, right?
Blind leading the blind is funny, too. I was also thinking about, I had my practicum onboarding meeting last week, and I was like, oh, shit's getting real. It's, like, kind of hasn't hit me yet that I, like, actually will start seeing clients soon.
Right.
But I'm like, an advice column slash episode is literally the opposite of what is ethical in counseling. So I do want to caveat the rest of this episode with that, because there were some more like therapy, more mental health questions that I got. And so I do want to say, like, this isn't necessarily like advice.
Right.
To not filter through your own needs, life, and context.
Yeah,
please
and
thank you.
Hey everyone, Nicola here with a quick disclaimer for this episode. Around the 56 minute mark, Sarah and I go through a listener question specifically related to our thoughts on wanting to have kids, but being really unsure and even worried about the process of actually giving birth. Following the airing of this episode, we received some really, really insightful feedback about how we spoke on this subject, particularly in the nuance that we were lacking. So in going through this episode, I can absolutely appreciate where this feedback is coming from. And for future listeners, we wanted to make absolutely clear that what we're sharing, our thoughts, our initial opinions, are absolutely not intended to be a universal experience. They are just our first thoughts. That said, there is a lot of shame around so many aspects of motherhood and womanhood, and by no means did we intend or want to reinforce that. But like we've talked about before on this podcast, intention does not always equal impact. So with that, if you have experienced birth trauma or feel as though it might be triggering to hear about our initial thoughts on the subject, we wanted to give you a heads up. Maybe you skip this episode, maybe you fast forward through, maybe you find other ways to ground yourself. Beyond that, I wanted to thank the individual who messaged me with this feedback, because it is so not fucking easy to give this kind of feedback, to bring up tough subjects. Super brave of her, and we really appreciate it. Thanks again for highlighting those blind spots and encouraging us to learn and grow from our missteps. We've always sought to use this podcast as a space to explore, you know, diverse topics around health, nutrition, growth. But at the same time, we've always highlighted how important it is to explore subjects with nuance and individual application, and ultimately attempt to accept our own humanness while also owning our own shit, which is proving to not be a very comfortable thing to do. But we're here, we're owning it, and we really appreciate you. So now, if you're sticking with us for the rest of the episode, we hope you enjoy. Otherwise, there will be more episodes to come. And thanks again for the feedback. Take care, everyone.
Okay, amazing. Well, I can't wait. So we're just going to go, we both posted, so we both have lists of questions, and we're just going to like spitfire back and forth between them.
Yeah. Did you, okay, wait, before we go, did you get any like actual nutrition training questions?
I got 2 nutrition questions.
Okay.
I got kind of questions. Kind of one. They're not great questions, but I'll go through them, but I don't want to start with those because they're lame.
Okay. Okay. Do you want to start with a big one that I feel like lots and lots of people will relate to?
Okay.
Okay. I love this one because it's really long. Okay. It says, big life changes happening right now and hard to see the future and getting out of the sticky, icky now situation. I don't exactly know what I want for the future to look like career-wise. Like, do I want to go back to university for my master's? Do I want to study an actual skill that AI can't steal? And it's a two-parter. I just feel really lost and isolated, and I don't know what to do with my life. I'm nearing 30 and freaking out.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Join the club. Yeah. Okay. Well, my first thought that came to mind as you were reading that was, and like, this is coming from me, so like, take this with a grain of salt because I'm like the number one planner of plans. Like, I need a fucking plan. I love a plan. But I am starting to more so realize that like it is really hard for us to predict and perfectly plan out what we're going to want in the future. Mm-hmm. Like all we know is like what our experience has taught us up until now and what we like and don't like and what makes us happy and what makes us unhappy in this very moment. And I think trying to base decisions on like what you think you're going to feel like in the future isn't necessarily something that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's, you know, especially career wise, we do need to think about, you know, our financial situation and like stability and stuff like that. But in terms of like what's going to be fulfilling and what our purpose is and like that kind of stuff, I don't think it's set in stone. I think it changes, and I think it's impossible to know what's going to make us happy. And if we're putting pressure on like making a perfect decision, that's difficult. That's my thought.
So synopsis there is like, if I'm reading between the lines, do what you're drawn to right now. Mm-hmm. Over trying to predict what you'll be drawn to in the future.
I think so.
And I mean, like, I'm thinking of like various points where I was like, I know I'm not loving what I'm doing now, but I don't exactly know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
What do we say for sure to those people? I feel like that's like a follow-up that feels really tricky. It's like, okay, well then what do I want right now?
Right.
I want to lay on the couch and watch Love Island.
Yeah.
How do I get paid for that? Okay, then you go into the YouTube world, you become a YouTuber where people just watch you watch stuff.
I mean, the opportunities are literally endless these days. Like, you could figure out a way to
monetize
money.
That. Yeah. Some Instagram coach is selling
a
YouTube course for sure.
Yeah.
But no, I think like I definitely can resonate with this. I think you and I in our last conversation were literally like, yeah, we feel that way right now, even though like I'm literally pursuing something in this very moment and I'm still like, what do I want to do with my life when I grow up?
Yeah.
I think it really is just like an ever persistent feeling. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like our lives are so pressured to have things figured out.
For sure.
We just like haven't as a culture figured out how to stop this cycle of like feeling pressure but also telling ourselves we shouldn't feel pressure but still feeling pressure. Like, who has broken that cycle? I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't met them.
No.
Okay, but what are your thoughts on like, speaking career wise, what are your thoughts on like this idea that like your career has to be like such a sense of like purpose for you, or like your, you know, your career has to be your passion. Because I think a lot of pressure comes from that too, where people are like, man, I could make money, but I'm like not necessarily happy doing what I'm doing, or vice versa. I'm doing something I love, but it's not affording me the lifestyle that I want to live from a financial perspective. Like, and there's this pressure that like, and this idea that if you do what you love, you'll never work a day and like the money will just come. What are your thoughts on that?
I fucking hate that, first and foremost.
Yeah.
But no, I think like there have been times in my life where I didn't like what I was doing necessarily, but I was also like, my life was really good and I was really happy. And I think that piece around like the lifestyle mm-hmm. is one we don't weigh enough.
For sure.
Some people I don't think have really thought too much about what they want their lifestyle to be like. But I think if you can create like a life that does include going to work or some way of making money, whatever that looks like, in order to, you know, allow you to build this lifestyle, I do think that what we do doesn't matter as much. Like mm-hmm. for sure, some caveats, like, is it causing you immense stress? Is it a terribly toxic work environment?
Yeah.
Is your like physical body deteriorating as a result?
Yeah.
Like, does it feel totally draining and you get anxious even thinking about going in? Like, those are all things where I'm like, okay, yeah, let's change. But if it's like a chill job and maybe you're not like feeling so fulfilled by it, but the rest of your life outside of it is great.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For me,
you can find purpose and meaning and fulfillment in multiple facets of your life. And I think just for whatever reason, we put so much of that onto our career, or at least in my upbringing, or like the stories that I've been told and learned. Well, actually, my dad's the opposite. He's like, it's a fucking job, make money. Like, and I like took it the opposite way. And I was like, no, I want to do what I love. But I think that that situation can feel even worse if we're not finding that meaning and purpose elsewhere in our life, whether it's through relationships, whether it's through, you know, anything else that we're doing. So there's a piece of that too, that you have to think about, like, are you putting pressure on yourself for your career to be like your one source of like purpose, fulfillment, validation, whatever.
Yeah, it's like the soulmate syndrome, but for a career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't really think there is one thing that you are like meant to do. I mean, maybe that gets to a deeper like value or belief of mine, but I think there's lots of ways, just like you said, to be fulfilled. And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I had another thought that just completely escaped me. I'm dealing with immense diet brain right now.
My thought was, I also think fulfillment is partly a choice. Right. Say like more. You can choose for things to be more fulfilling based on like the mindset you have around it and what you're focusing mm-hmm. on, stuff like that. Right. It's not like all out of our control. And like, it's like, there's something floating out there that's like gonna magically like make us happy or make us content or make us fulfilled. And we just have to find it. Like, it's also a choice that we make
mm-hmm.
to feel.
Yeah.
That.
I think that's probably like a hard mindset to adopt, but I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
I can picture myself being very opposed to that at certain phases of my life.
Absolutely. And in certain aspects even still.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
But
I'm also curious about the piece, like, I don't feel like we need to talk too much about like the AI aspect of it, but I think you right. could argue that like so many jobs will evolve. Like, think about when you were growing up. None of the jobs that actually exist today were ever presented to us. Just
exactly.
Like, there will be more jobs later that we won't have like thought of
yeah.
or
yeah.
have been in an existence right now. She's putting her hand up. What? Say it.
I have like strong opinions about this because Brad is like so in this world and like fucking loves AI and is like, we've had lots of conversations about it, but AI is not going to take people's jobs. People's jobs are going to evolve to use AI
mm-hmm.
to make things more efficient. right? And the only way that you're going to be out of a job is if you don't learn how to use AI. Right. This was like, I got this from Brad because his industry, digital marketing, obviously is like heavily immersed in that world. Right. So he's like, I'm never going to have AI. Like, I'm never going to not have an employee because AI can do something. I'm going to need that employee to prompt AI properly and to utilize AI properly and implement things. But like that employee is going to now be able to get way more fucking done because of AI.
Mm-hmm. And so, I would like to think that it would take away some of like the shittier parts of a job, like the mundane kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and the last part in this advice piece was, do I go back to school?
Yeah. What's your insight on that?
I think very hard about like the effort you are willing to put in to like totally shift gears,
mm-hmm.
and like maybe dabble with something that is less of a commitment, especially if you're feeling like this complete stuckness where you have no clue. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be different if you had like always wanted to do something and the timing hadn't been right, or
yeah,
you know, have so many skills that align with something, but to completely like change directions entirely, like it's a massive life overhaul.
Sure.
And I think for my one perspective at least has come with a lot of challenges I didn't predict, but also a lot of really, really wonderful things that I also had no conception of when right. I signed up for it.
Yeah, I'm having this conversation with a client right now, and she's kind of in a same situation, and I think some people feel like, okay, they went to school for a certain thing and now their skill set is only relevant to that fucking little thing. And like, mm-hmm. if they want to do anything else, now that means they have to go back to school for a different thing. And I'm like, man, you have so many fucking skills that you've learned through that like, yes, the program was XYZ and like maybe feels niche, but like, what are the things that you're doing in a day-to-day? What skills have you built and how could that transfer over into a different industry? Mm-hmm. Like there's probably so many more things that you could do that don't necessarily require legit a 4-year fucking degree or like a 2-year certificate even, right? That you're doing already. It's just going to be applied in a different situation, you know? So I think we sometimes think like, another degree or whatever is the only kind of option.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just like instantly makes me think like there's maybe some imposter syndrome there too.
For sure.
Where yeah. it's like, you're probably way more qualified for things that you're
absolutely
giving yourself credit for.
Yeah.
My last thought is ask 5 people in your life to give you their top 3 highlights of their job and top 3 negatives. Like, what do they love about what they do? What do they fucking hate? And maybe some things that you haven't considered will come up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The grass is always greener.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, that was a good one to start off with. I'm going to shift gears and have a more personal question.
Okay.
What bad habit have you tried your absolute best to stop doing, but still find yourself doing it?
Phone use has to be.
Me too. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, yeah. I was doing so good with like not having it in my bedroom at all. And mm-hmm. then when Brandon left, it was so much easier for me to blur that line.
Yeah.
And I even like, I was charging my phone outside. So I literally had to plug it in and go into bed so I couldn't like scroll or play my new obsession, which is Block Blast.
Oh my God. Okay, tip number 1, just don't fucking have those apps on your phone.
Don't play Block Blast. Don't even think about blasting blocks, okay? But now all of a sudden I'm like, why? I woke up one day and was like, why is my phone charging in my room? Who did that? And so I've completely Goose. Like ruined my, yeah, it must be that bitch.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my habit.
Yeah, it's definitely my habit too. And it's just interesting, like, when you're trying to change these habits, and the more you, like, are trying to build awareness around it, the more kind of, like, excuses you notice for it. So, like, I'll justify it of, like, oh, I'm trying to get content ideas, or, like, oh, I need to look up these baby things, or, like, you know, like, there's so many different, oh, well, I was coaching all night, so now I, like, need my scroll time after, like, fucking yeah. whatever. Like, there's so many things we tell ourselves, but, like, it's so funny too, because when Brad is on his phone, it's the most irritating fucking thing. I'm like, you're a piece of shit. Like, get the fuck off my phone. Okay. Like, I don't say that, but like in my head, but like, that's obviously me projecting my own dislike of that being my habit.
No, truly. There's so many, okay, bringing it back to a place of phone. There's so many reels out there where it's like, girlfriend on her phone, totally fine, totally fine. Boyfriend even looks at his phone and she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, I feel that to my core.
Exactly. Yeah.
But also I have the wherewithal not to all of a sudden play the reels at 100% volume. Who does that?
Right.
Brandon.
Yeah.
So
I think the biggest one that makes me upset is when Brad goes into the bathroom for literally fucking 30 minutes. Like, I've started timing him and it's like literally 30 minutes sometimes. Where I'm like, you didn't even poop. You just fucking scrolled for 30 minutes. And like, it just drives me insane.
But that's also when I get the best content from Brandon. So I was like, well. Yeah.
So funny. I'll like text Brad and I'll be like, how's your poop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to prolapse your asshole if you stay in there any longer.
That's how like, hemorrhoids happen. It's bad. It's bad.
Hot tip. Anyways, of the day.
I would say that's a bad habit. Do you have any other ones that you can think of?
Yes. Okay. Well, lots. This is another one. I, for whatever reason, cannot have a beverage without leaving about an inch of it at the end. Can't finish the last inch unless it's like a Diet Coke or something, obviously.
Right.
But like this, I'll drink it until there's like that much left and then I'll be like, I can't.
Yeah. I mean,
coffees.
I don't think that's a bad habit.
It feels like it. I'm losing out on my hydration.
Fair. You are. Fucking chug that shit.
And it's just like, then there's just like half, and Brandon won't put it away either because he's like, oh, she's probably still drinking it.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I forgot about it. That's probably from 6 days ago. Yeah. Actually, that's a lie. I've never let that happen.
You wouldn't, no.
No. Okay, so that's a bad habit. Sometimes I'll just go look in the fridge.
Yeah, that's one. I think lots of people do that. Just like open the pantry or open the fridge and then just
like, I'm not hungry, but I'm like, let's see what's up.
Right.
Yeah. What's been added since last time?
I would say that one of mine is when I'm feeling stress or anxiety about what I need to do, instead of doing it, making a list. That's a bad habit.
Be listing. Yeah.
Yeah. Because then the list just procrastinates it longer and
And okay, I've got another one. Maybe this isn't a bad habit, but it feels like it's been not helpful, at least to me, is that I'm always listening or watching something. Always.
Interesting.
When I walk, I have a podcast. Okay. When I'm at the gym, if I'm not training with Val, I'm listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
When I am meal prepping, I'm watching TV. Like, there's literally, unless I'm working on a paper, doing client stuff, or out in public, I'm, no, even then, I'm still probably listening to something or watching something.
Yeah.
And I just have no content free time in my day.
That's a little dopamine addiction. Yeah. Brad's like that too. Except for when we're together, he's not like that always.
Yeah. That feels like different.
Yeah. But when you're, I think it's like, some people are just like really uncomfortable with like silence or like being bored, which like, I don't think that's you.
No,
that's not what's happening. Yeah. But maybe in Brad's situation, it is.
Yeah.
We had our friend. So we were, we were driving one day with our friends and our friend Colby is like, okay, I need to like tell you guys an observation I made about you. And like, I don't want this to be offensive.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with this.
And we were like, okay. He's like, I noticed that, like, you guys are like, you'll just drive without music on.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, like, we talk, you know, like, mm-hmm. when we're together and driving, like, and often I'll drive without music too. Like, I'll just turn it down.
Just you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that's weird.
Yeah. But yeah, I was like waiting for like a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, it's fine.
He's like, that was hard for me to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
These two guys are psychopaths.
He has music on at all times and like so fucking loud. I'm like, I can't even hear us talking. Anyways, okay, let's move on to a new question. Those are some, let's stop talking about our bad habits.
Well, I'll probably start thinking about them. Everything I do today, I'll be like, oh my God.
Bad habit.
Okay, I like this one. Okay. I'm very interested to hear your take.
Okay.
And I feel like my take, even 5 years ago, would be very different from what it is now. Okay. Genuinely thinking about plastic surgery, but also how that money could be cool if I used it to take a 2-week trip to Europe. Which one would you spend it on?
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. They did follow up and clarify on the type of plastic surgery.
Yeah.
But I almost want to just leave it here first.
Okay, because my first thing was like, I would be curious on the type, on like what plastic surgery. And mostly the reason I'm curious is like, what is your main driver for wanting the plastic surgery? Is it, you know, is it, well,
let's assume it's,
it
aesthetic.
Doesn't fucking matter. Let's you assume can do aesthetic. What you want to do. Yeah. Right. But I would think about like, what is the desired outcome that you think is going to come from plastic surgery? What happens if that outcome is true? What happens if that outcome is not a reality? So for example,
meaning like you think it'll make you feel better about yourself and then you don't.
Yeah. Okay. Weigh those two pros and cons versus a trip, for example, what could you get out of that in like this on the same level, if it's like a confidence thing or whatever, like, is there ways that could be derived from that as well? And then I would also weigh like the pros and cons long-term of both. And like the effect it's going to have on your life long-term. But having, I don't know, I'm not like anti-plastic surgery and I think everyone can do whatever the fuck they want with their bodies. Where I like, I'm starting to like get really uncomfortable is the fact that like everyone's starting to look the same.
Yeah, like, that's super interesting.
Everyone's starting to look the same because we're like, man, we're all trying to like have big lips and have no wrinkles, and like, what's gonna happen when like all of these people are doing this so young and then we're all old and we're like literally clones of each other? Like, I don't know, that is the thing that, and like, God forbid our body have any signs that we like have aged in some capacity, or we've lived our life, or we've given birth, or we've gone through a traumatic experience. Like, I don't know. It just, that's where I struggle with it, where I'm like, man, number one, if you're talking about a solo travel, that will fucking change your life forever. Like, if you go on a solo trip, you will learn so much about yourself. And especially if this person has never traveled before, like, just you just like get a sense of like the world is so much bigger than like we think. I don't know. But I'm also biased because I love traveling and I'm not personally someone who has considered plastic surgery. Ask me after I breastfeed my babies and my tits are all saggy and shit. But
yeah, when they look like mine.
Anyways, that's my thoughts.
Okay, mine is, your thoughts? Bluntly, with no nuance, get the plastic surgery.
Amazing. How is that different for what it would have been 5 years ago?
I think I used to lie to myself and say that I was like valued travel a lot more than I do.
Right.
And this is my gripe. I think we put so much value on people who are adventurous and like to travel and judge the shit out of people who don't.
Right.
And I have done that. And yet, I think I'm a person who doesn't like to travel.
That's fair. Yeah.
And I think I finally come to terms with that.
Yeah.
And also, I am someone who is like always wanted a very specific surgery. And so I do have the sense of like, if it has been a long time since mm-hmm. you have wanted something and you, I don't want to say I know for sure, but I think I can for myself. I know for sure it would change my entire,
yeah,
from how I live and yeah. what I do to how I feel about myself.
Yeah.
If it would make that big of a change, then I'm like, fuck yeah, do yeah. it. Cause you can also then travel later. And then for, again, personally, I'm like, what would my travel experience be like if I had the surgery?
Right.
And then went traveling.
Right. Yeah. Like, so Nicola's advice, so do both. Better. Get the surgery and then go travel.
No, but I mean, like, it's also no small thing. Like, okay, so I will give you the follow-up. The surgery that this person is talking about is a rhinoplasty.
Okay.
So the recovery is different for yeah. that than something else, but any surgery is a risk. And I think sure. that also needs to be said. Like, it's a massive yeah. risk. You're going yeah. under anesthetics. Yeah. It's a big fucking stress on your body. And like, you know, there's going to be recovery from that. And if it's something like a nose that's on your face, people will ask and you will have to
talk about it,
be in a position to talk about it. And if you're comfortable yeah. with all that and it will make that big of a difference for you, mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck yeah, mm-hmm. you do you.
Yeah.
Also, I'm like, maybe this is just because I'm in such a place of tired right now. I'm like, what I wouldn't give for the excuse to not leave my room for a month. I'm like, amazing. Give me the surgery so that I can just lay in bed.
Thing. Yeah.
And no one can bother me. And I have every excuse in the book to be like, yeah. sorry, I can't.
That's amazing. I love what you said about the travel thing and how we like glorify adventurous people, because I think that's something that I've struggled with, and not just like with travel. Like, I like to travel, but I had some realizations on our last trip about the type of travel that I like. And I'm maybe not as like open to every type of travel or like every single experience.
We're not free spirits.
Yeah. But where I see it is like the hiking outdoor world. I'm like, man, that's so cool. Like, I have a lot of clients who like downhill bike, or they like backpack and they like camp. And I'm like, man, that's so fucking cool. You're so adventurous. You're like such a cool person. I wish I was like that. But mm-hmm. then I like think about the logistics of like sleeping in a tent and like, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, that's, or like even hiking. Like, I don't love hiking. I fucking sweat so much. I'm like so uncomfortable. If there's not water at the end, I'm like, just fuck. But so like, why are we glorifying that? And like, why is that person like cooler or like more whatever
mm-hmm. than someone else? I also think there's like, like this belief that like people who are worldly have more to offer,
right.
or like have more wisdom, right. or are just like more exciting, have more to offer. Yeah. That just like keeps coming yeah. to mind. And I like really truly thought that.
Right.
And I thought like, I will at some point be ready to travel. And I like, don't get me wrong, I did like a little bit of it. A girlfriend and I spent like 5 months in like Costa Rica, Central America when we were 19. Mm-hmm. And that was crazy. You're correct. It was like extremely transformative, I think mm-hmm. specifically because we were of that age.
For sure.
But the situations I was in then, you couldn't pay me to go do that yeah. same trip again. Yeah. I'm way yeah. too high maintenance now.
Yeah.
I like, we just got back from Texas and I couldn't even stay a night at my mother-in-law's house because I needed to be in my own bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm also like, I know I'm going to get sick every time I travel. It's mm-hmm. not fucking worth it. I'm going to feel like absolute trash. And I like feeling good.
Yeah.
I love yeah. my routine.
Yeah.
And my meal prep so much. Yeah.
And that's fair. And you know what? That's something that allows you to show up for like all of the other things that you do in your life as like the best possible. Right. So I don't know. Yeah. It's like such a weird It's such a weird thing.
Mm-hmm. Also, but I feel like that really to me, or how I've like made myself not feel so shitty that I'm not someone who likes to travel, but I'm like, that just means I'm like done a decent job of cultivating a life I really like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Even if it means I live in 600 square feet for the rest of my life, like I have lived a happy existence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. There's still a lot on this list and we've already been talking for a long time. So I think that moving forward, we just need to like tighten things up.
Oh, but some of these are okay. Okay. We'll try. We'll fucking try.
Okay. Okay. Next one. You're going to answer this question first.
Okay.
How did you decide to have kids and Nicola decide not to have kids?
Okay. I love this. Because I don't often get asked why.
Right.
People just assume I'll change my mind. I have never, ever had the inclination that I wanted children. I've mm-hmm. never pictured myself as a mother. I did not grow up. Even when we played Barbies as children, my Barbie was like career Barbie, best friend Barbie. She was never the mom. She never had kids. If there were kids in the equation, it was like, then I was the kid. I was never mothering.
Right.
Don't have a mothering bone in my body.
Yeah.
I've just never wanted to. And so for me, it was never like a decision. It was really just like a sense of knowing.
Yeah.
What I will say is there was a period in which Brandon wanting children made me have to think,
right,
am I a really a hard no, or could it be something I could do?
And you decided it was something that was a hard no.
I just could never make myself think it was a yes.
Right.
And I don't think that's, for me, that's not a reason to have kids.
For sure.
There's also the environment and the entire world collapse that I fear.
Yeah.
There's also me being a terrible mother that I fear. There's also the fact that I'm extremely broke and in massive debt and literally cannot even fathom paying for a child right now. Also, I love my bed and I can't be fucked to wake up for another human being. So
amazing.
There you go.
Those okay, are hopefully reasons. That answers your question.
Okay, your turn.
It's interesting that like, I don't know, like, I don't think it's been a thing for you, but like, if people decide not to have to, they shouldn't feel the need to like justify or like Mm-mm. say why, right?
Mm-mm.
Which this question wasn't asking for that necessarily, but I think this person's like probably debating it for themselves. And
also,
like,
I'm like, you can also be curious.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, I'm not offended.
I talked a little bit about this on the pregnancy episode, so mm-hmm. go back and listen to that if you want more detailed. But mostly it was Brad really wanted kids. I was indifferent. And, you know, just where our relationship is at and wanting to, like, see him as a dad and wanting to, you know, have something more than just us was, like, our biggest thing in terms of how
interesting
we decided on that. Why?
I think that's something I have heard people's arguments for having kids often is like, but what it brings something bigger than just you.
Right.
And while I completely understand that, and like to the extent that my brain can be like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And also I'm like, I don't need anything beyond me.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fair.
Like, and I don't think it makes you incomplete that you don't have children, but I can understand that idea of wanting something beyond you.
Yeah. And you can also find that beyondness in other things. It doesn't have to be in a kid. It doesn't have to be in,
like, in your human bedtime routine.
Yeah, there you go. So anyways, listen to the pregnancy episode if you want to hear more on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting to hear how your thoughts evolved on that.
Yeah. Okay, next question.
Okay. God, some of these I really didn't know if they were bots or not. Okay, this one's very interesting. I think you'll have a hot take. Do you think everything in relationships should be 50-50? I have a sister-in-law that takes this very literally. She has a whiteboard on her fridge that she writes on how much money she has spent for groceries, paying bills, travel expenses, etc., and says, takes the number, divides it by two, and then says, you owe me this much money. Should things in relationships be 50-50?
I don't think anything in any fucking relationship is ever 50-50. And I think you are DeLulu if that's your expectation. Your sister-in-law is DeLulu. I can't remember where I saw this, but I saw someone talk about it as like, okay, in your relationship, there is 100%. And that encapsulates you two as a couple. You have 100% capacity, 100% financial capacity, 100% emotional, fucking energetic, whatever. Together, you need to make up that 100%. That might look like someone doing 20 and someone doing 80 in one little aspect, or like in one component of it, and someone's, you know, 60-40 in the other, whatever. And I think that there's being more conversations around, and it's interesting, like, okay, 50-50 in financial, is that your question? Because that was the example she gave. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah,
I'm like, think about how much of like work is unpaid labor.
Where I was going with this, yeah. Right? So there's so much unpaid labor. There's also like, if you don't make the same amount of money, it is fucking insane to expect your partner and you to contribute the same amount towards your shared expenses. Like how does that even make sense? Right?
Yeah, I'm nodding my head aggressively.
Yeah. So no, my short answer is no. It's not 50-50. You're a team, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of things behind the scenes that are going, unpaid labor, emotional labor, so many things. And that could be on the female side or the male side. It happens in same-sex relationships. Like, mm-hmm. it's not just as simple as like, oh, man versus woman roles. Like, there's so much.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, yes, I think like an equitable relationship makes sense, but equity is not like equal.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking too, like, what happens if, you know, your partner gets her boobs done and she's laying in bed for 4 weeks and she can't actually go do stuff? Are you just going to let her like suffer there? No, you're probably going to pick up the slack.
Yeah.
Just like when the other partner leaves for 7 months to go put out fires.
Exactly.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Are you going to pick up the slack? Yeah, I guess. Begrudgingly, but you'll do it. So.
Yeah. And I think.
It'll never be 50-50.
No. And I think it's just a matter of like communicating and, you know, mutual respect and understanding and appreciation for all of the fucking different roles. This has been like such a topic of conversation with Brad and I now that we're having a baby.
Yeah.
But even now that we're having a baby, we have a reason to talk about it more. Whereas before, these issues were still happening with our relationship, but it was like, well, we're both working and like blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So like, it should be the same, but like, no, there's still those behind the scenes things happening, you know?
Yeah. And when you have kids, like, it just because you are also the one carrying the child, things automatically are going to become unequal.
Exactly.
And so like, how do you balance that later on? Yeah. Freaking wild. Question. Also, if I was like the partner to this woman, I would start putting down like, cheeseburger, you had one bite, therefore owe me.
Right. Yeah.
75 cents.
Yeah. Yeah. And I bought money stuff is complicated.
Yeah.
Money stuff is really complicated because there are so many factors that influence it and how we were brought up and what the rules were like in our family. God, like, it's a lot. But yeah, that doesn't seem like a healthy way of managing that, even if that is her expectation. It seems a little passive aggressive on the whole whiteboard sitch. Anyways, okay, next question.
Do you have another one?
I have another one, yeah. This could get ranty, so I'm going to try to keep it short when I go this.
Okay, but you can have two sentences after.
Okay. Well, you're gonna answer it first.
Okay.
Also, I didn't even look this up because I already have opinions. I'd like to hear you talk about the Okinawa diet. Apparently, people from this area live a long time. Less protein, lots of veggies. Love your podcast.
I've never even heard of it, but I can tell you that's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. That I said, no idea what that is. Any diet that restricts food groups equals not cool. Okay. Did not take the time to research this diet because I don't care. The thing that we need to think about when we are looking at diets in other societies and other cultures and other places in the world is it is impossible to say, to separate diet as the only reason why these people live longer. Okay? It's impossible. Even in nutrition research, it's very fucking hard to control all of the variables, right? So, okay, they eat lots of veggies. Maybe they have less animal products. They're also probably doing way more fucking movement throughout the day in order to get their food. They're also probably less stressed. They don't live in the same culture that we live in terms of all of these pressures and social media and the financial stressors. They have better senses of community, you know? So is that diet the one thing that is making them live longer, or is it all of these other things? Also, is living longer your only goal with your diet and nutrition?
Also, right? Who just wants to live longer?
Well, yeah, exactly.
That weirds me
out. What is their quality of life? You know, but the biggest thing is like, is that fucking realistic in the society we live? Probably not. Okay. Our society has set us up to crave highly palatable foods, to have access to food very easily. And if we're trying to follow a restrictive diet that's in existing in a world that we don't even live in, like, is that realistic? No. So that's kind of my thoughts on that.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm like, Nicola has nothing else to add.
I concur.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, no one, I don't need to extend my life. Okay. okay. Went through that one. Okay. Do you experience insecurities in your relationships? How do you navigate that?
1000%. Is anyone going to say no to that?
I couldn't think of any.
Really? In any of relationships? Or are we talking about our romantic relationship?
No, I think you're right because it was plural. Okay, well, start with romantic
relationships.
I think when I was dating, 100% insecure about fucking everything. Also, it's your early 20s. Your brain hasn't fully formed.
Yeah. You're basically
in a different time of your life. Yeah. Like, who isn't insecure about every part of their being?
Yeah.
Also, I think like the type of relationship you're in, the like comfort level you grow into. I'm also curious too about like, is it an insecurity that has existed in you
before,
regardless of the relationship you're in, whether it's platonic or romantic or anything outside of that, or is it specific to the relationship? That I think is a curious piece
for sure. And if it is specific to that relationship, then that should raise some more questions about the supportiveness of that relationship. So you say in your romantic relationship you couldn't think of any insecurities
currently? No. Ooh, maybe like my financial literacy.
Right.
And like spending and stuff.
Yeah. I think
but prior to that I used to have a ton. Like in our early days of dating.
Mm-hmm.
A ton for sure. But I not think anymore.
When we think about insecurities in a relationship, we automatically go to thinking about like, do they love me? Will they leave me? Like, do I need to filter myself? Like, do they like my body? You know, like those types of things. But I think as you get deeper into a relationship and as you get older as well, number one, if it's a supportive relationship, those securities tend to like diminish. They might still exist in some capacity. And like Nicola said, if that was like a pre-existing insecurity, maybe it might not ever go away. But I think different insecurities come up. So like the financial literacy one is a good, is a great one. I, especially now, my, one of my big insecurities is how am I providing value to our life together? Mm-hmm. Because I'm mm-hmm. in this transition phase of like becoming a mom, but not necessarily putting the same value on like mom duties as someone else might. And as I've put on career and bringing in money, like, you know, so I'm insecure about working less and being a mom and not providing the same financial mm-hmm. income. And I'm placing more emphasis on Brad's role as the main financial provider, which is making me feel insecure, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I think that those insecurities just kind of shift with time in a relationship and with age.
Yeah. And like with context, like with what's going yeah. on. But if you think outside, I'm thinking like instantly I thought of friends versus family. Mm-hmm. But I do have some friends where I fear looking stupid in front of.
Mm-hmm.
And like, obviously my definition of stupid is specific to me, but I think like, I don't want to be perceived as being inarticulate. And yeah. I also don't want to be perceived as not being good enough or as a good enough person or friend that right. then would translate into me being a good therapist. So like friends I have from school, I would say I'm more insecure on my friends from school because right. we're all wanting to do the same thing. And I fear that like, you know, if they come to me with a friend situation, I have to balance the line of being a good friend, but also what would a good therapist do?
Right.
And I don't want to be thought of as like inarticulate or not like politically correct or whatever. So I have like insecurities yeah. around, I think, communication pieces.
Yeah. I have those same insecurities, more so with certain friends, depending on, and it's interesting how like some friends, I don't worry about that at all. And other friends, it like seems like so much more based on the way that they communicate, the way that they articulate. Mm-hmm. I always think about my friend Anna, because she is also a therapist and she's very deep. She's very like, I think I've said this, but like, I feel like she like stares into my soul. Right. And so it like, yeah, it just is like the way that I feel insecure around her is like, would not even exist in another friendship. That's like more base level, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so. Also I think what I'm hearing there too is like it's not Anna's fault.
It's not
because of the relationship, because of who you want to, because of what you value in her, you also want to be valued in yeah. similar ways.
And on that wavelength, I think that insecurity in a relationship isn't always a bad thing, right?
Hot take.
And if the other person is making you feel insecure because they are ignoring your needs, your boundaries, they're, you know, a fucking narcissist or just a shitty person, that's one thing. But if you are insecure in a relationship because someone's pushing you out of a comfort zone or like, you know, bringing up things that maybe
to step
exactly
into a new
then I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
That's good. I like that. And if I may, there was a second question.
Okay.
This is different, but also associated. This person said, can you talk about insecure attachment and how to deal? And I think from your point about like insecurity is not always a bad thing, I don't think different insecure attachments have to necessarily A, be bad, and be forever. There's always room for growth. And I think like because of how pop psychology attachment styles have become, we are putting way too much emphasis on like, oh my gosh, I'm anxious attachment. This is mm-hmm. what I always do in relationships. And I'm like, well, all right.
If that's a story you're telling yourself, that's what you're going to continue to always do.
And I mean, there is a lot of really good research around attachment styles. And for those who are unfamiliar, it stemmed from like infants attaching to their primary caregivers. And this study, like have you heard of like the strange experiment or strange situation? And then there was also like the wire monkey experiment. It's basically like you want to attach and seek comfort and security from someone, you're generally your mother as a child. But then the theory has been adapted into adult relationships where if you did not get that sense of security from your parent, you are likely to develop an insecure attachment style that then you bring into generally romantic relationships that looks like avoidant, anxious, or a combination of the two, disorganized. But I think you can change that. Like there's also evidence. I don't think I'd believe in couples therapy the way that I do if I thought that the way you go into a relationship is the way you have to remain in a relationship.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And like that awareness piece and learning about, you know, like where that's stemming from and how it's showing up and how it like is actually manifesting in your relationship, like having someone to talk through that with you, with your partner is like absolutely massive.
Yeah. And I mean, like the attachment style itself really does bring into question like what other people give us. But I think it's twofold. It's like, is the person, kind of like you've said, giving you what you need and yes, encouraging you to grow, but also like respecting your boundaries, providing you with your needs, like allowing you to have your needs met. That's one side of the equation that is important for growth or getting over an insecure attachment style. But the other side is you. The other side is you experimenting with like different reactions to things, taking time to self-regulate, maybe educating yourself, maybe asking for how your reactions to things are interpreted by your partner. And I don't know, go to therapy.
Shameless plug. Therapy's the best. I haven't been.
I will be able to do shameless plug soon when I say, if you'd like really cheap counseling and you're in BC,
hit me up. Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. I've got a couple more. Do you want a quick funny one or
quick funny?
Okay. What's the most embarrassing song on your workout playlist?
I don't think I have any embarrassing songs. I'm not embarrassed by any of my music.
No.
Let me see.
Well, Nicola is starting to like country music.
Yeah.
So you would have used to think that was embarrassing, but now you're embracing.
I wouldn't have said embarrassing. I would have said in poor taste.
Okay.
No, I am looking through. I'm not embarrassed about any of it.
Well, my embarrassing thing is that I don't have a workout playlist. I just go in and I'll like put on like Taylor Swift all songs or like.
Oh yeah. I don't think that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like I don't either. I'm literally just looking through my liked songs and I'll just play whatever my last and start the playlist.
Yeah.
Eh.
Yeah. Okay.
What would be embarrassing? I don't know. I can't even think of anything.
Yeah. Okay. I got another one. I don't know, you might have some insight onto this. I'm like curious if you think about this, but okay. And I have a very opinionated opinion here. So this person says, it's another thing about kids. I want kids very badly, but then I think about the act of giving birth and instantly say, no thanks, I'm good. Do people overcome that feeling?
Interesting. When I was working at the university, there was a grad student doing a study on women who literally had a phobia of giving birth.
Amazing. What were the findings?
And it is a thing.
Right.
Like there is, and yes, they have become mothers, but there is this like sense of like, well, I think there's, maybe it's twofold, but like the fear of actually being pregnant of like, it stems, or I don't know what it stems from. I didn't actually like go into this literature. I just talked to her. But it's like, if you're pregnant, it's like kind of a revulsion. Is that the word?
Sure.
You're like revolted by the idea of being pregnant when you think about it.
Right.
And like, then if you do get pregnant, you're kind of like disgusted by the process itself.
Interesting.
And not just like a, it's kind of gross. You're like physically disgusted by. And it does prevent a lot of women from getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Because they're like, no, it's fucking gross.
Okay.
And then the process of giving birth is like just a harrowing event, and that further prevents them from wanting to. Now, for this person, I don't know if they fall into that category of like actually being in this researched.
Yeah.
Would it be a psychological? Yeah, a psychological.
It sounds like like a phobia. Like a
phobia. Yeah.
Okay, well, I didn't know that, and I'm going to pretend that I didn't so that I can go on with my answer that sounds now very out of fucking touch. But my initial thoughts on this was, number one, the process of giving birth is 12 to fucking maybe 48 hours of your life with your kids. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to live the rest of your fucking life, hopefully, with kids. And you are scared of the 24 hours that it's going to take to birth the baby.
Right.
It seems like that's not what you should be scared about. It was like my first thought.
Right. Like, be scared about raising it.
Yeah.
What about when it poops on you for the first time? What about when you, never mind.
What?
Nothing. That was part of the birth process. I was going to bring up something to make it worse.
And then my second thought was like, if you can't get through that, you don't want kids that bad. That seems very rude after like what you.
No, I don't think so. I think that's not out of touch at all. I think that's very.
That seems like one very small sacrifice in the grander picture of all the sacrifices that come from motherhood. Then my other thought was, okay, well then there's other ways to have babies, to have kids that don't involve you actually giving birth. Then to answer the last piece of the question, do people overcome that? If it's a like legit phobia, maybe not, right? Or maybe they just have a therapist there with them in the delivery.
Go do some exposure therapy.
Yeah. But from my, we watched a birthing video last week in our birth and babies class. It was fucking great. Nice. But from my personal experience, number one, I was never someone who feared childbirth, but I was definitely someone who did not want to be pregnant, did not want to think about the negative outcomes that could come from childbirth. Women die giving birth. Like, it is very, like, it's legit to have some fears around it. In my experience right now, 10 weeks out-ish from that happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh
my God.
Feel zero fear. I feel empowered and excited. And I like can't even explain it, but, and I don't know, like the fact that I'm strong and fit probably is helpful, right? But I don't know if it's like conversations that I've had with people or if this is just like some motherly instinct that I didn't think I had coming out in me. But yeah, I'm just like
hormonal stuff, man, as well.
Like, this is going to be such a giving birth is the highest natural high that a human can experience. Okay. Like the oxytocin rush from having a baby and that initial feeling that you have when you hold your baby for the first time is the, without drugs, the highest that anyone will ever feel in their life. Okay. If you want to do drugs, that's great. I support.
I'll do drugs.
Yeah. But I am like, I'm not scared. I'm excited.
I love that for you.
I just like can't even explain it. It sounds fucked up.
Oh God, are you going to cry?
No.
I feel like you're getting very emotional.
I'm not going to cry. I just am excited. I'm like so excited to meet this baby. I'm like, I'm going to fucking crush childbirth. I'm going to be a champion. That's like my thoughts. But
folks,
I'm also having to
encourage
like
you to give birth. I don't know what will. That was the
I'm
speech
also
of a century.
Trying to pull myself back and like have some fucking realistic expectations of like,
you're just
it
gonna
might
go
not
there
go
and
to
be
plan.
Like, let's fucking get it.
There might need to be interventions that I'm like not super pumped about.
Yeah.
And I just like need to be okay with that. But in terms of like fear, like, that's not what I'm scared of. There's many things I'm scared of, but that's not one of them. So, but that's just
me accidentally dropping the baby the first time I meet him.
I mean, I wasn't scared of that, but now maybe I should put that on my list.
Make sure I'm sitting in a low spot. That's fine.
Well, dude, it's so funny because now that all of our friends have young kids, like anytime the guy goes to hold the baby, the parent is like, okay, sit down, put your arms like this. I will place the baby there. Don't fucking move. I will grab the baby when it's time.
Yeah, but you know, in like a few months' time, it's like that's when you get all those photos of the dad just like hoisting it up in the air.
Yeah, yeah. Like the sloth hold. Yeah, it's so funny. Anyways, okay, that's enough of that.
Okay, wow. I feel like you crushed that question. This person is going to be like, wow, knock me the fuck up. I'm ready.
That's just my experience.
Okay, I have one more that feels relevant.
Okay.
Thoughts on open relationships?
Oh, man. This is maybe go to a side note, or maybe you don't even know this world on Instagram, but when I think of open relationships, I think of Amanda Bucci and
No.
Okay, we're not even going there. That's like literally where my head goes because that is
it's very fresh and relevant.
Fresh, and it's like where I've like seen a lot of conversation around that world happen. But anyways,
wait, has she acknowledged it yet?
She acknowledged her, but she like what she said was fucking trash.
Okay, side note, we'll reconvene on this topic after.
Anyways, I think that open relationships can work for specific people and can be very healthy for specific people. Is it something that I think would work for my relationship? No. Is it something that I've considered in the past? Yes.
Do you know anybody in a successful open relationship?
Define successful.
It's like people are pretty happy
to
keep it going right now.
I think that anyone that I know that's in one, it looks successful outwardly, but I don't necessarily trust that it is successful on both partners' sides.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think they're tough. Like, relationships are fucking work. Mm-hmm. They're extremely challenging and yet can be so fulfilling and create so much like joy and love and support. And the same is true for an open relationship.
Absolutely.
But I do think because relationships are so hard, an open relationship becomes even harder.
Even harder.
It's like focusing on nutrition, hard. Dieting, way harder. It's the dieting of relationships.
Yeah.
It's like there's so many more pieces to consider. Communication has to be that much better. Your emotional regulation has to be that much better. Your self-knowledge, self-care, trust. Like, they all have to be just that much better. And yet, they can be beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say a small percentage, like, that will work for a very small percentage of people. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy for us to think, oh, well, if we just opened our relationship, like, things would be better, or I wouldn't have to worry because like now they're allowed to like hook up with other people, or
that's like an open relationship would go away. In response to the current monogamous relationship not going well.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's always the best option, although some people will realize that like, okay, this was actually a missing piece for us and why it wasn't working.
Right.
It's like being in a consensual non-monogamous relationship does.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's also so interesting because this can look so different. Like the way this can look for individuals is like, honestly, I have been learning about it through some various books we've had to read in school. Mm-hmm. But I really had like this one idea of what an open relationship looked like. And like, there's so many ways it can look that my mind is like blown because like I was never... Just like no one teaches you that, hey, you could be a fucking nutrition coach when you grow up. No one's like, hey, you could be in an open relationship when you grow up. Like, we're just like not informed of any of this.
Yeah.
But like, there's so many different ways. Just like you can create a life, you can create a relationship that works for you. But the fact that it's open then requires like it also to need to work for all the people involved.
Yeah.
And that just inherently complicates things.
Yeah, for sure.
They're interesting.
Yeah.
I would like to talk to more people who are in successful ones, like talk to people. Have you read Ethical Sluts?
No.
That's a very interesting book. And it does give examples of like where non-monogamy really works and how people have made it work.
Right.
What's the other one? Polysecure is another book that I've read through school that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever talk about it in your couples therapy? Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. You don't have to answer.
Like open relationships?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever talked about it in couples therapy. I think I talked about it in therapy. Maybe like once, just, and it was a response to stuff that was going on. And ultimately it was like, okay, no, this wouldn't, you know, fix anything.
Right. It's kind of like a band-aid solution for something bigger. Yeah. I think it's also like maybe interesting for like folks who are bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
Or like when a partner literally cannot meet a certain need of yours.
Yeah.
There's lots of reasons people have open relationships.
Yeah.
And like, fortunately, I think the stigma is slowly declining.
For sure. Yeah. We have people in her life that she like literally has like some sort of physical condition that like affects her ability to have sex. So like, okay, what happens when like that is an innate need for the partner? Like, you know, there's so many situations like that.
Partners with like who are in like a long-term committed relationship but are asexual. There's so many different spectrums of things that could elicit the need for an open relationship. But I think like when it's just like generally discussed, it's usually like, oh, someone has, they're swingers, or like you just have like different, or they're sex like partners,
sex addicts, like,
and it really like doesn't paint nearly like the kind of picture that an open relationship can be.
Yeah
They're very interesting.
Okay. Do we want to do a couple more, or?
Sure, if you have some more. Okay. I think the only one I have is, I guess it's nutrition related.
I got a bunch about like the career stuff that kind of we already talked about. But okay, this one's interesting. How do you deal with friendships that seem to be fading as you grow older?
Bye.
Is it worth trying to revive them, or should you just let them go? Okay, we have Nicola's answer.
That seems harsh, but I do think that's my opinion.
Yeah.
If they're fading and you're finding yourself okay with it, I think that you need to know. If they're fading and you feel any other emotions towards it, maybe you don't want to let it fade.
Mm-hmm. I think there's an inherent, like, especially if it's like a long, long, long time friendship, and you like inevitably in relationships, like things change. People change, we grow, interests maybe change, where we're at in life maybe changes, etc. I think about my like best friends from home who all had babies before me, you know, I moved away, like those friendships have quote unquote faded in that I don't see them as much, but I still absolutely consider them some of my best friends. And I know that if I needed something or whatever, like they would be there for me. I think the dynamic of your relationship and what it looks like day to day can absolutely change without that necessarily meaning your friendship is fading. But at the same time, if you are growing apart from someone and maintaining a relationship with them is starting to be more of a stressor, or, you know, not something that's adding enjoyment to your life, like we don't need to keep people in our lives for the sake of like keeping them in our lives just because they've served like they've been with us in a specific time or whatever. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, well said. A more nuanced take than mine.
Yeah. Nicholas like, bye-bye.
Bye.
I had this conversation with someone the other day of like, people were like, oh, you'll meet people in your birth and babies class that like, we're still friends with people in ours. And I was like, I don't want any fucking new friends.
Okay, wait. I don't know why I was thinking about this, but literally just yesterday I was thinking about how cool it was that my best friends literally all throughout childhood and into like first few years of college were my best friends because my parents were in a prenatal class with them and they throughout my childhood had big, not parties, but we had like 3-4 families that were really close. And like once or twice a month, we would have like a rotating dinner party. And I remember it being like some of the happiest times of my life.
Right. Okay. But I have friends like that already. I don't need more of them. I had 6 friends have babies this year. Fucking
perfect. Okay, fuck everybody else. You're right. Yes. Fuck them. Yeah. Fuck them. Just go in with a t-shirt, not here to make friends.
I'm just like, man.
Hi, how are you? Sarah? I'm Natasha. Fuck you, Natasha.
I'm back just off. As an adult, making new friends is hard. If you feel like you have a solid friendship group, you don't need to feel the pressure to make new friends. That's just my thought right now. I'm like, no, I barely maintain the friendships that I've
exactly. Yeah. I don't have
no
time.
New friends. Fuck off.
No new friends. I like that as a t-shirt. No new friends.
Anyways, that's just my thought. I would like to be a better friend to the friends that I currently have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. But yeah. Okay. You want to do one more?
Loss of sex drive due to working out too much? ? Just had a second baby. Hormonal? Worried for a relationship without the relations.
Oh, man. I mean, there's multiple facets going on there. Hormonal, yes.
Probably.
From having
probably a baby, hormonal.
From working out too hard. From the fucking chain. I mean, second baby too. Now it's just even more stress than just one baby.
Yeah, the psychological changes of like going into motherhood plus having a second baby.
Yeah.
Plus, yeah, I mean, working out too much is interesting because it's like working out too much compared to what? And like, what are the other factors? Like, are you also not eating enough?
Yeah.
Are you also super fucking stressed out? You know, like not it's sleeping, hard to you place it on one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say in that situation, especially if you have a young baby, it's probably not from working out too much. It's probably from a mix of like all of the other things. There's a really good book that I'm reading. It's called To Have and To Hold. It's about motherhood and the relationship dynamics that come from having kids. I'd recommend reading it. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Also, I'm like, do you have the time to even get into the headspace where you want to have sex? I rarely do, and I don't have a child.
I mean, my kid's not here yet, but I can't even like,
like intimacy and sex just, is like so much more than just like setting aside, I was gonna say that 5 minutes, but like, you know, there's so much more build up. It's like, what's going on in the relationship too? Do you talk to your partner about this? You know, this idea of like, will a relationship work without that aspect? It could totally work without Absolutely. That aspect.
Yeah.
But do you want it to go without that aspect? I think, are you okay with it being absent now for a while, forever?
And is your partner? It has to be forever, right?
No. No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Piece of that too. And, you know, on both partner sides, like what role does sex play in the intimacy in your relationship? Are there other ways that you can show that to each other? Can you physically have sex right now? Like, is it going to feel good? You know, are there other things that you can do?
Mm-hmm.
What are all the ducks that need to be in a row in order to get yourself in that headspace? And is that realistic?
You know? Also, I think there's something to be said for when it's been a long time, there's this like pressure to have sex.
And have
then
it be
that
amazing.
Pressure gets so stressful that you put it off. Yeah. So maybe also like, what if you just start small?
Yeah.
And if the goal is to get back into like what regular is for you, or like what a normal sex life is for you,
yeah,
get back into that by like, okay, maybe we're just like just us for 10 minutes in a day, a few nights a week,
yeah,
to talk, or like, you know, to say sweet things to each other.
Yeah. Literally kiss each other. Literally.
Yeah.
Because
sex can be like a huge feat.
It's like one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, start do smaller, lower stakes intimacy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I'll have more insight on that. Ask me in fucking 6 months from now.
Yeah. Also medications. I feel like that's often something people overlook when they're like, oh my God, my sex drive is gone.
Yeah.
Are there any medications going on? Because that is a very common side effect.
For sure.
Especially for any like neurological stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. Well, I got no more good ones. So.
Okay. I think I'm like 90% sure this was a bot, but we're going to end with this one.
Who are you trying to get with?
No, not that one. personality or looks. I got this one like 4 times and I'm like, okay, bot.
Yeah.
Personality or looks.
Both. Is that allowed?
No.
Oh, fuck. I mean, for what?
For, let's put ourselves back in the position of dating. If you were like going to start dating someone, you were single, you wanted to be dating, are you going to go for personality or looks?
Looks. If I'm dating.
I think it depends on the mood for me. I dated a lot of really charismatic, really ugly people.
Did you?
Yeah.
Huh.
But also I feel like maybe ugly is harsh. And okay, I need to tell this story. When I started dating Brandon, some of my friends, specifically one, literally said to me, you're careering. You've peaked. To date anyone other than him will be a joke because he's the hottest man you'll ever date. And I was like, wow, way to put the pressure on. And here we are. He's bald now, but still.
I remember you telling me that story, and that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The day after our first date, and then when he left in the morning after that.
Yeah.
I was living with my friend, and she literally came downstairs, high-fived me, and said, bitch, you're careering.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think looks are, like, initially what draws you to someone.
But I think you would also argue that if someone's personality is really fucking attractive, it makes their whole being so much more attractive.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And like, no one wants to date a hottie with no personality. Like, imagine if I was...
If you're just having sex, maybe. Like, if it's just for sex.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
also, we've been
I wouldn't just for sex, a good personality.
True. There was a guy I was sleeping with for a while that I lied to all my friends about because I was too embarrassed to say that we were together.
Because he was dumb?
Because people didn't like him. He had a bad personality.
But he was hot.
And I was like, well.
Yeah. He's hot. Sex is good. That's great. You don't have to talk.
Again, I'm in my early 20s. Things don't matter.
Yeah. But yeah, I think both are important. I think you need to feel attracted to someone, but that attraction doesn't necessarily have to stem from looks and can absolutely stem from someone's personality and the way that they treat you and the way that they make you feel.
But at the end of the day, like, don't you want to be with your ugly best friend and some hottie who doesn't like fulfill you in any way?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, what if I was being my...
The personality piece is the most
important. Like, what if I was being my most authentic, hilarious self and, like, the guy didn't laugh?
Right.
Like, what? Like, I'm over here cracking jokes.
I feel like sometimes Brad feels like that about me. Like, they never laugh at my jokes. I'm like, okay, babe. I laugh when they're good jokes.
Oh, wait. He doesn't get the response he wants from you.
Yeah.
Like, do you not think he's funny?
He's very funny sometimes. Sometimes he just like tries too hard.
Okay, but do you never, I don't know. Maybe this is like answering it for me. Maybe I wouldn't care if Brandon looked different than he does. He's very beautiful. But we will sit on the couch together literally 4 hours dying laughing.
Right. Yeah.
Like I'll go to sleep with a stomach ache because we've just been cackling about the stupidest shit.
Yeah.
But I really think like our sense of humor are just like very, very like aligned.
Yeah. Yeah. They're aligned with.
Like it's, I think, my favorite feeling when I make him laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, and he has this really funny laugh when he thinks something's really funny, where his like mouth does this weird little thing and he smiles really crookedly. It's so cute. Yeah. And I think that's when I'm like, he loves me so much because he thinks I'm so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And that has nothing to do with his looks.
But if he ever shaved his mustache, I'd divorce.
Yeah.
Okay. What? He knows that.
So funny.
I will literally write it into our vows.
Can I? I think I told you the story about what the boys used to say about Brandon when I first met him.
What?
Can I tell that story?
When they told girls he was gay?
Yeah. They were like, Brandon only dates guys, so that the girls wouldn't pick Brandon over them. Like the whole baseball team. So when I first met Brandon, they were like, yeah, he's gay. And I was like, oh, cool.
Right. So, I guess I won't hit on him.
Yeah.
Which is so funny.
I picked the absolute fucking worst guy possible to hit on, but it's fine.
Okay. Moving forward. The summer I met him, which was the summer right after that, everybody told me this story. And I was like, wow, I feel so bad for you. You had like the driest summer of your life. And he was like, yeah, it was honestly the worst.
Yeah.
Like when he found out. Okay, but this is, we're just talking about how hot Brandon is right now. But do you remember the story of when Evan first met him?
No.
Okay, well, it was like there were all these boys who Sarah and I originally met through were from baseball. So they knew each other from playing college ball in the States. Some of them went to various schools, but they all ended up playing for the Lethbridge Bulls. One of them, the first time he met Brandon was prior to playing on the same team as him. It was just that Brandon and a few people had traveled from their school in Louisiana to see some other people. They were all staying in a hotel. Brandon was laying out shirtless by the pool, as he loves to do. Evan came down, saw him, didn't know that he was one of the friends of friends,
right?
And went back upstairs to the hotel room and said, you guys, I just saw the most attractive man I've ever seen in my entire life. And then they all went down to see him and it's fucking Brandon. Right. And they're all like, oh my fucking God.
Yeah. You're going to hate
him. Like, well, we can't tell him now. It'll go straight to his head.
Yeah.
And of course it did. He loves to tell that story.
Also, it's just because it was Evan that did it.
Like, oh yeah,
so fucking
yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah, well, we hit the jackpot. Looks and personality, both are men. It's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think like Brad is not like, Brad's looks were not like quote unquote my type.
Like, oh yeah, neither were mine. Brad was, ooh, I feel creepy saying this, Brad fits the mold for my type more than Brandon does. I liked tall.
Yeah.
I'm not, it's going to sound bad if I list them all out like
that. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely like were opposites in terms of like our type before.
Yeah. I also really liked really fucking nerdy guys.
Brad checks that box.
Brandon's not a nerd.
Yeah. So anywho. That got way long-winded, but.
Oh, well, that was fun.
Yeah. Okay, well, we said we were going to try to keep that to 45 minutes, and I'm pretty sure it's been like an hour and a half, so you're welcome.
Yeah, and we didn't really give advice. We just talked about how great our boyfriends are, but that's okay.
No, that's just how we ended. But yeah, hopefully, I don't know. I feel like we gave some good insight from our personal
experience. Look, I'm going to break my bad habit right now.
There you go, Nicholas finishing her glass of water. I need to pee. The fact that I've gone this long without peeing is amazing. So we need to do a fuck yes and a fuck no and wrap this shit up.
Okay, fuck no. Travel. Traveling. Hate it.
My fuck no is heartburn. Never had it in my life until.
Yeah. That's
the absolute worst.
It's very bad.
My fuck yes is that I get to see you in 2 days.
So my fuck yes is like, okay, fine. Travel has some perks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Also, like, is that the... Wait. Did I give you that disco?